Vision. Living the life of dreams. As has been stated in many of the treatments, Mary Baker Eddy begins Science and Health with three introductory quotes. The first is a quotation from John. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The second one is from Shakespeare. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And the third from Mary Baker Eddy. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy behest. Thou here and everywhere. Mary Baker Eddy has stated herself that Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures is a product of inspiration, and that she was merely a scribe under orders. In other words, she was a copyist, writing down the thoughts as they were dictated to her by God. She was given the primary tool of Science and Health. Just as anyone may have an idea about something, it may come in a rough form. With Science and Health, she ended up revising it, and the final edition was number 432. Nothing really changed from the first edition, but it had to be put in a format that was acceptable by the individual who was embarking upon studying it sincerely, and that included everyone. So no matter what the level of understanding was about God, man, and the relationship between God and man, or even what God consists of, it had to be in a format that could be understandable by and learned from every individual, no matter what their level of spiritual understanding was at the moment. So the dimension of Science and Health is dynamic, based on the level of understanding of the individual that is studying it. That is a wondrous task for anyone to embark on, but that's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy did. She herself had not read it from beginning to end until near the end of her career. And when she did that, she totally rearranged the chapters because she realized that she had been delivered a scientific system, not just a truth here and there that she pasted together, but a complete system. When she authored Christ in Christmas, or should I say, when she presented it, because again, she was a scribe under orders, as she says she was with all of her publications. So when she prepared it for publication, she included some very significant illustrations to explain the concept on all of the text that was written as a part of Christ in Christmas. And along with those illustrations, the final one was blank. She left it blank purposely to give an opportunity for the advanced thinker to listen to the one and only incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, to guide one for further explanation and development of the system. The system I'm referring to is from page 146, where she says, divine metaphysics has now been reduced to a system. She didn't say she presented every detail of the system, nor did she ever indicate that there was not an opportunity for further development and understanding of the inspiration that was dictated to her from divine mind. Since God is infinite, there is no possibility that anyone could install a circumference on infinite. The infinitude of God means exactly that. It has no boundary. Only our increasing understanding of God enables further doors to open up to get a more clear and more comprehensive view of the infinite. The three introductory quotes gives us a clue as to what really is the true dream. What is meant by dream is pursuit of something beyond present experience. And it doesn't say my dream. The title says the dream. John doesn't say to know my truth and it will set you free. He says know the truth. Shakespeare doesn't say there is nothing either good or bad, but my thinking makes it so. It is the right thinking that makes the truth be realized. And the third quote about, oh, I am blessed. That indicates that Mary Baker Eddy was opening her thought to the blessings of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. No limit. And it is only an introduction to what is in that enormous, without limit, without measure, infinitude of the being of God. And therefore, the being of God's image and likeness, which is man. And of course, the ever importance that connects them, which is the communication between God and man. So what dream could one possibly desire? A man might desire to be married to the greatest beauty queen of all time. A woman may desire to be married to a man that gives her the security and the safety and the protection that she doesn't feel that she can have on her own. But both of these concepts are based on a human limited viewpoint that they cannot have them unless it is from a person. Throughout Science and Health, Mary Baker Eddy continuously talks about getting away from personality. In fact, personality is the key to limitation. not the key to the dream of all dreams, which really is heaven on earth, heaven within, heaven of spirit, which is indestructible and omnipresent. There are clues all throughout Science and Health that there needs to be a subjective state of consciousness, not an objective state. In other words, we need to form the perfect model in thought from what God itself is comprised of. What are the components of God? That must be the components of the model of any kind of a permanent dream. And keep in mind, permanent is infinite, so it means that it's ever expanding based on one's own concept of the infinitude of the infinite, incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. There have been a number of treatments on the topic of vision, and several recently, for the sole purpose of pointing out that vision is the key to existence. If we have a vision of death, we have a vision of an absence of existence. If we have a vision of life, we have the key to opening up the door to the infinite, eternal, ever-present life to which Mary Baker Eddy referred to in her final words that were written on a notepad by her bed when she passed away from visible appearance from planet Earth, where she said, "God is my life." She didn't say, "God was my life," or "God will be my life." It was in the present tense. In other words, there is only one time, and it is now. The dream is now. If we want to open our door of consciousness to the reality of all existence, one might think initially that a dream could be to have all the money that would take care of them forever. But is money any kind of a permanent media? Currencies come and go, no matter what it is. Even if one thinks about gold, the price of gold fluctuates like the price of every other tangible commodity. In studying charts of gold, charts meaning a graph that shows the price versus time, it has very wide fluctuations. If one looked at the 1970 to 1980 era, based on the Christian calendar, one can see that it built up from a very low price in the 1970s and peaked out at $850 US per ounce about 1980. It then collapsed and stayed at a very low price for many, many years, collapsing from $850 down to approximately $250 to $300. If one got caught up in the aura of the excitement of the price of gold and bought it at the peak, he could never recover his original investment for many decades. And if one factored in the depreciating value of the U.S. dollar, it was even much longer. It certainly was proven that gold was not a store of value, but only a form of temporary excitement. The same thing happened in Holland with a so-called tulip euphoria. Tulip bulbs went from a very low price to an enormous price, only to collapse. One can think of a number of different tangible things that experience the same kind of volatility. Nothing tangible can be consistently a store of value. It is only a temporary concept of a store of value, which can evaporate away in a flash. If one looks at the stock market in October of 1987, they might think that owning shares of stock, which represents ownership in companies, one might think that that could be a store of value, thinking, well, the company is always going to be there. Well, anyone that has studied that realizes that that's not true. Companies can go out of business. Companies can be broken up by a mere vote of the people that are controlling the laws of the land. Humans, in other words, can make a decision to do anything that they so desire. And they can conceal the truth of what they're doing for a very long time. For example, we've had assassinations of presidents in which the truth has never been revealed. Now, slowly, there is some exposure of the truth about some of those events. The same about tragic things, like what they consider 9/11 event. There are a few who announced the truth about it at the time, and many of them have been executed. Some have not been. There is some truth that has been exposed about it, but has it totally been uncovered? How about the weather? How many know that the weather is controlled by the U.S. government? I'm talking the international weather on all of planet Earth through technology of electromagnetism. They can create earthquakes, storms, fires, whatever they desire. They can cause destruction. Anything material can be manipulated, because that's exactly what matter is. Matter is a manipulation of human think, or one could call it human thought. One could call it human dream. It can be given any kind of a name that is desired. We can give it our own personal name. Anything that can be changed by any form of manipulation is not real, is not from God, is not to be relied upon as a store of anything except a bag of tricks. But do we want our vision to be based on a bag of tricks. Do we want the dream to be flexible? Or do we want it to be something that can be relied on indefinitely, without measure, and a part of the infinitude of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? Everyone is conscious of life based on their concept. Mary Baker Eddy refers to a lady who had become insane and was gazing out a window for many decades, being lost in thought to the departure and the hopeful return of a lover. And during that period of time, which was many decades, she did not age at all because she was lost in thought about a particular event and expected it to take place. So she was not conscious of the calendar that was showing her at many decades older than what she herself believed to be. And her thought was more powerful for her experience than was universal belief. Mary Baker Eddy refers to a boy who was apparently put into a dungeon and kept there for a very long time. He apparently learned to eat the earth, and he sustained himself from that form of sustenance. And apparently, there was no light. The desire to live apparently was stronger than any other belief about human existence. And so he did sustain himself in that dreadful manner. He created an experience that believed that that was okay. And when he was finally taken out of the dungeon, he did not like the atmosphere to which he was subjected. One would think that he would be elated at the freedom. But no, he was so used to his limited form of existence that it was his choice to return to that terrible situation. But to him, it wasn't terrible. It was his comfort zone. So what does it mean to live the dream? Revert back to Shakespeare. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What is the dream for one person could be pure hell for another. Even for one, but the opposite for someone else. When the disciples of Jesus queried him about someone who was born blind, they ask him, who did sin, this individual or his parents? Jesus did not argue with them. He didn't restate an error, but he immediately translated his thought to be seeing the perfect man. And he said something to the effect that neither did this man sin nor his parents, but that the glory of God may be manifest in him. In other words, that was the purpose of the viewer, the observer, of what was a very unfortunate thing for someone to experience. And the duty for whoever was capable of making it come about, as Jesus was, their duty was to manifest the true individual nature that was perfect man, manifested by perfect God, with the catalyst of the thinking of Christ Jesus. Christ Jesus connected the dots, and therefore the manifestation was made visible by all. If one thinks about what they may perceive as something missing in their life, it is probably not something tangible. But they think something tangible is a solution. But is it true that anything tangible can be a solution? If one thinks of something tangible as being a symbol of the qualities that are underlining, then yes, the symbol would be the solution. But really, it's the qualities underlying the tangibility that is the solution. As mentioned, a woman looking for the ideal man is probably looking for what she thinks the ideal man will provide, such as what was mentioned of security and safety and protectiveness. Security. Mary Baker Eddy has brought out that one wonders why someone who has a good friend always appears to be looking at a beautiful character when that individual views their friend, because they love their friend. They respect them. They know the qualities that the friend is expressing. And that's really what they're attracted to. Therefore, the physical appearance may be of little or no value whatsoever, not even a part of the grading system that is done when one views a friend, because the friend always seems to be beautiful, beautiful in nature. Forget the physical characteristic. It may have zero influence on the viewpoint. Well, what is our viewpoint about God? Do we admire the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, such that that is what we are cultivating in our thought? We are trying to bring our dream about by cultivating those qualities? Or are we looking for a beautiful structure that is called a house that would be our home, that is made out of just the kind of materials that we admire as being a permanent structure, in a location that is beautiful to us, in a climate that is wonderful and pleasant to us? In other words, the us plays a very big part. In fact, it may play the entire part. 100% of our viewpoint is going to be our personal viewpoint. Could be totally different than what someone else thinks about it. We may like to live in the woods and have wild bears and tigers and everything else that's all around us. Or we may want something very peaceful in a small town or a location out in the country that is nearby, a town where we can buy all of the conveniences that we think we need as a human. It is completely subjective. The dream is completely subjective. It is based on individual interpretation. The more we devote our attention to the qualities, the easier it is to cultivate our dream to something that can be permanent. A longtime friend told me, qualities, qualities, all are qualities. What are the qualities that have significance to us individually? That is what our dream is composed of. That is the entire composition of our dream. Could be totally unimportant to anyone else. Our station in life is individually unique. Our viewpoint is individually unique. God is infinite individuality, which means that there is no other individual like any other individual, period. That's it. Everyone is individually unique. Hopefully, our uniqueness is cultivating an increasing value on what the true nature of God actually is in our own consciousness. If everyone would cultivate, nurture, respect, think, talk, and live the perfection of God as defined by Mary Baker Eddy, not a man, not something esoteric that cannot be touched, but something that is within that can be constantly experienced. If everyone would be striving to do that, the dream of all dreams would be here and now. There couldn't be an individual that exists that could upset it, because it's permanent. It's what is real. It is the only thing that is real, because the substance thereof is spirit, which is flawless. The components thereof would be the creative ability, the capacity, capability, facility, would all be without interference or dilution or deflection. It would be composed of intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. All of these mentioned are qualities of mind. It would be connected to the ever-active activity of mind, and therefore it would be bringing forth the infinite, omnipotent power, which is one only in all, of mind, and that power would be an influence on our view of every quality of God. our view of spirit would be the view of soul, which is spiritual sense. We would be seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling the flawless, transparent, reflective nature of spirit as the only substance in everything. And we would be having those same spiritual senses that would tell us the identity of principle that would always be in balance, always be harmonious, would be ever operative, and would have a system and structure of which everything in our view would be composed. The intelligence, wisdom, and knowing that would be revealing all of what has been said to us on an individual, unique way would also give us a life that is the same component. A life that would be of the spiritual nature of the flawless transparency and reflection of spirit itself. It would be everlasting. It would be ever multiplying. In other words, self-compounding. By self-compounding, I mean if we related it to numbers and it was 100 now and it grew by 10%, it would grow to 110. And the next year, by another 10%, it would grow by 11, not 10, because it's compounding on the level of understanding where we were to begin with for that new period of measurement. Life would be of infinite variety because we would be ever expanding our view. There could be no end to it because it is reflecting the infinitude of mind. And mind is ever expanding. It is ever understanding a larger and larger perspective. Truth, of course, is fixed, and that's what keeps us on track to make sure that we are not letting any variance come into play. In other words, there can be no diversion, no deflection, no dilution, no stoppage or reversal. Truth is always true. It is fixed. There is no deviation. That's what we need to think about. The first verse, the first quotation about the truth will make you free. If we know it, if we know the truth, it will make us free because we will not have any restrictions of a so-called matter. It will be all of the substance of spirit. But we have to have the correct motive, which is a part of consciousness, which is all a part of truth. In other words, we have to realize that God is always conscious of itself, and we reflect that ever-active, dynamic consciousness. Nothing is ever static. It is always dynamic, and it is guiding our step on a continuous basis. And this is all because of love, because love is the absolute plan and design of all existence. It's like a bunch of gears that come together, and there's a lot of clanking in it unless there's a lubricant. The lubricant can turn a clanking noise into silence. And it's not a silence of ignorance, it's a silence of confidence. It's like every gear is intelligent and knows exactly where it is supposed to be when it meshes with the other gears. That's where our thinking has to be. It has to be meshing with all of the qualities of God. Love is not only the plan and design, but love represents motherhood. Just as life represents fatherhood, the motherhood is nurturing every single quality of God. And it nurtures it with the lubricant of spiritual inspiration, one of the definitions of love and of oil, spiritual inspiration. How often does love forgive? Well, Jesus' disciples asked him that question. They said 7 times, and he says 70 times 7. I think what he was really saying is, don't condemn. Then you never have to be concerned about forgiving. Dale Carnegie, a very respected writer and a promoter of personal success, said, never strongly disagree with someone, because tomorrow you may be agreeing with them. You may be enlightened and realize that you have been looking from an incorrect, incomplete viewpoint, and the other individual was correct. And you would benefit if you would open your eyes and realize it. You could benefit from knowing the truth about yesterday, what you did not know. Dr. Fluno, one of the first lecturers on behalf of Christian Science that was appointed personally by Mary Baker Eddy, wrote an article on criticism, very short, page and a half in text. He says that criticism is the difference between life and death, basically. He says criticism will ruin your life. It will darken every avenue of your existence. It will prevent you from healing. It'll prevent you from having anything good in your life. It is such an important article, and like I say, only a page and a half long, that not only was it recorded so you could listen to it, if you have only a few moments, I don't know, I think it's maybe 5 minutes long, but you could do it frequently, because that is what Mary Baker Eddy devoted 3 times a day to doing, and that is examining her thought to make sure she was not criticizing anything or anyone, period. And she said when she did that and got herself, her thought off of personality, she was able to heal instantaneously without limit. So she practiced it, specifically setting time aside 3 times a day. It wouldn't take much of an imagination to realize that's probably what Daniel was doing and why he was thrown into the den of lions. He was also praying 3 times a day. He could very well have been praying the same type of theme that we're talking about here. There is only perfection. So why am I going to waste time thinking about personality, which we know fluctuates like a bouncing ball, or like people dancing on a dance floor, moving here and there and everywhere, going around in circles and getting nowhere? The dance of mortal mind. That's what it's all about. Do we want to be in the dance of mortal mind? Do we want to be in the dream of human emotion? Or do we want to be in the dream, which means heaven, heaven on earth, right now? Mr. Rawson says that the way to heal, or at least one method, he certainly doesn't say that this is the one and only, because he was one that tested everything, and if he tested it and it brought success, then he would use the idea. If it didn't, then he would go on to something else. He said that we should make a very short statement about any problem, stating that it was not true. There is no, and then you put in whatever is the problem. And then he would immediately recommend shifting thought to what God is and thinking about perfect God, perfect man, in a perfect heaven. And by getting thought totally on that concept, that triology of perfect God, perfect man, and perfect heaven, he was able to accomplish things that were just wonderful, instantaneously. A man had a load of rocks dumped on him as an accident, of course. Mr. Rawson saw the event take place alongside a Mr. Spalding, who was a Christian Science friend of his, who both happened to be gazing out the window at the same time and discussing whatever. Mr. Rawson said, "There is nothing but God." His confident statement and understanding about what that meant brought about an instantaneous healing, where the man jumped up through the pile of rocks, totally untouched, totally unscratched, without any problem at all. He was healed. He was in a shooting contest. He was a wonderful sportsman. He was in a shooting contest. He had never shot the rifle that he was using. And before he looked at the target to pull the trigger, he turned aside, facing away from the target, and got his thought very much aligned with the infinite, incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And when he felt that he was in alignment with that beautiful definition of God, had a oneness of God, totally, he was led to pull the trigger. His eyes closed, facing away from the target. He won the contest. Because he was in alignment with truth. If we focus on the perfection of God, the perfection of man, the perfection of heaven, and that we are there in that atmosphere, there's no limit to what can be accomplished, because we are aligned with the infinitude of truth. That's the real dream. That's the real existence. That's connecting the real dots so that we can live it without limitation. Vision. The dream. The real dream that we must strive to make real. There is nothing but God. Amen.